na 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 na. Here come the Yachtsnapper.
All right, here we go live in St. Joe, and if we can get the feedback echo fixed in our mix minus, that would be awesome. We are live in St. Joe as Chiefs training camp padded practice number 2 is underway. Alex Gold, Cody Tapp up here. We've got JT producing the show back in Kansas City. Of course, our training camp coverage is brought to you by Break Time, Missouri's homegrown convenience stores. Download their mobile app and find a location near you. Today, we're excited. We're going to have Isaiah Pacheco join us after
That's
practice,
right.
Maybe around 11 o'clock or so.
Well, when you look at Isaiah Pacheco, obviously they did not bring as much competition as you and I were anticipating for Pacheco, and instead waited till the seventh round to take a guy. He said 1,000 yards is his goal again, all the other stuff. And so, yeah, I'm excited to talk to Isaiah Pacheco, see what he has to offer. I wonder if he likes pads. Running backs have to get hit a lot anyway. I would think pads day is like, I'm good. Like, I don't need to, like, feel what it's like to get hit. That's pretty much my job all the time.
But now it's real, right? Like, now it's real. Last week we're up here. They're in shorts. They're in shells. And tomorrow maybe they go back to that as not every team does 3 straight days of padded practice, which is what it would be if they continue that tomorrow. But you get a feel of – what actually is Omar Norman Lott doing as a rookie now that he's in pads? Josh Simmons, there continues to be more and more conversation about him. How is he holding up after, we'll see, after today's practice of 2 straight padded practices? So I think the key will be tomorrow when we're back up here. Is Josh Simmons still full go, 100%, all that? Like, if that happens, then I think you start to believe even more about him truly being healthy and ready to go before the season.
I mean, at this point, yeah, if he's getting through everything, and he has so far, I got to assume that maybe he's all right and that he'll continue to be okay moving forward. And so it just matters whether or not he does stay healthy and the contact and all the other stuff. And I know we're going to talk about that position here in just a minute after we get done talking about Seth Lugo. But, yeah, it's another good day to be at camp. And obviously a number of reasons we've been paying attention to left tackle, because I don't think it can be emphasized enough. And I talk about this anytime, like I do a radio hit somewhere else and everyone's like, you guys realize that left tackle has been a problem, but not such a big problem that it stops him from getting the Super Bowl. Don't you worry a little bit, in honor of Happy Gilmore coming out, that if they ever have a good left tackle, it's going to be like, ooh, Happy learned to putt? They've had 5 different starting left tackles and continue to play in Super Bowls. What if they solve that problem? Then you're all screwed, right? I mean, that's what I'm supposed to assume.
Oh, it'd be a game changer. It'd be a game changer also for Patrick Mahomes in the next, 5 to 10 years of his NFL career, potentially finding a left tackle. And I understand people are skeptical because, as we've brought up and you brought up, I know, Cody, last year we were excited about Kingsley and all that. I totally get the skepticism. I still think the difference is we're talking about a guy that was a first-round pick that a lot of people believe would have been drafted higher.
Somewhere higher.
You know,
we don't have to argue about how much higher.
Would have been drafted higher, if he was healthy. And I think there are probably some teams looking at the initial reports out of camp, the fact that Simmons is getting first-team reps and available, saying, uh-oh, did our medical team not judge this right? Now, it's too early to say it was a drastic success or anything, but right now the Chiefs' medical staff relying on them during the draft process looks pretty smart right now.
It does.
Right now it does.
It does. It really does. I mean, the early going on it is been very good results. And part of it just being that every team in the league didn't think he was going to be available for like half of this season. And that alone appears to just not be the case. Even the Chiefs themselves, I don't think he was going to be available this early and this often. And so you actually find your left tackle, then yeah, we're not going to complain. Meanwhile, the Royals had a starter, as they found him a couple of years ago in free agency, a guy we all thought for sure should have been and was going to be traded because of the fact that he was on an expiring contract for the Royals. Not anymore. Royals lock up Seth Lugo, 2 years, $46 million. And then all of a sudden, we're in a situation where the Royals' rotation for the next 2 or 3 years is pretty locked up. Let's just start with the deal itself.
Yeah.
It is on paper a discount. It is a discount on what regular starting pitching, based on the performance that Seth Lugo has given you, you are getting a discount. I think partially just so he can ride out part of his career in Kansas City, a place he clearly likes, Gold, and then so that the Royals can get some assurances with the vesting option instead of it being a player option, that they'll have some options on how they handle his career now versus he was the guy in control, which is why they had to give him the extension. The money alone is a good deal for the Royals, and they're spending mid-year, so I'm not here to complain.
Yeah, it's a great deal. We can talk, as you said, about what it means for this year and beyond and how do they fix their outfield now that they don't have the ability to trade. I guess they still have the ability now that they're not going to trade Seth Lugo. We'll get into that. I know there's people thinking that as you're driving around town right now. But as far as the actual numbers, as you said, 2 years, $46 million, an option. Yeah, I love the deal. He does turn 36, though, in November. And so you needed to have that protection. I think, though, the thought from them always has been, he's 36, Cody, or will be 36, but he wasn't a starter his whole career. He doesn't have the innings that another 36-year-old might have that's a starting pitcher in this league because he was a reliever for 90% of his big league career. It's only the last 3 years, really, now that he's been a starting pitcher. So I think that's probably what gives him some assurance in that scenario. But I'll be honest, I'm shocked it happened. It's a good thing. I'm shocked. You know, we spent, and I think everybody in Kansas City spent weeks and weeks and weeks discussing, okay, if you don't trade him, then A, you better make sure you make the playoffs, or B, you better make sure you can sign him in the offseason, or you go the qualifying offer.
Yeah, we talked about, like, maybe he becomes a free agent, he opts out, and then you just bring him back.
I don't know anybody other than those inside the Royals organization that actually thought a mid-year extension was on the table. And for that, that's what also makes it a great deal. We can get into the other stuff later.
The bigger picture organizational stuff.
But, man, the fact that this got done in season is kind of impressive considering the past track record and how they operate as an organization. And for this team, and you saw the reaction from Vinny and other players on Twitter last night, what it does for the clubhouse is I think something pretty special as well to see in the message it clearly sends for them that they are not giving up on 25. And that's where, look, we talked about them trading Lugo, and I was for them trading Lugo because I didn't think there was any chance this could happen. And now that this can happen, this should not be. If you were someone
for trading Lugo,
only because you thought you couldn't keep him, you're like, you better get something for him. So that's what it came down to. But that's also why this was last night so stunning. I'll be honest, I was about ready to watch Happy Gilmore 2, and then I got the notification, and then I never ended up watching it last night because I was just texting people.
Locked into the Seth Lugo deal?
Yeah, texting people, just, organizing, thoughts on and thinking it out loud, and I'm sure your friends were texting you too, and everybody's talking about it. It was a surprise. I had people in other markets texting, like, what the hell are the Royals doing? And I'm like, well, here's what ended up happening. Yeah, it's a shock, but I actually think it makes a ton of sense for them as an organization, knowing not only the pitching depth that they currently have, which is not great because of injuries, but also what was your rotation going to be in 2026 if you didn't have Seth Lugo?
I got to say, because they have a lot of good pitchers in their organization. You're like, are you sure? I haven't heard any of those names. Why do they keep signing Dallas Keuchel? They're all 18. They're all 18, 19, 20 years old. So what you needed was time. I think the reason why they were interested in keeping Lugo is not just because technically he's been the best free agent starting pitcher they've ever signed. He actually has the lowest ERA. Jake Eisenberg, I think, has sent this out like three times. Franchise, he has the lowest ERA in franchise history for a player who's made at least 50 starts for them. So by the initial signing, he was a home run to start with. And so when you get a home run free agent signing, is that the time to just let him go? And so, no, they decided to bring him back, which I still think makes sense. I just didn't think it was possible. But I really think they did it for two reasons. One, all their starting pitching is a ways away. So like you said, what is your rotation in 26, 7, and 8? And now we have a huge chunk of those answers, presuming health, over the course of those years. And because I think that they're still looking at themselves in a window in which, for the next 3 years, Gold, these are the players, at minimum, off the top of my head, that are under control. Bobby Wood Jr., Michael Garcia, Vinny Pasquantino, Cole Reagans, Lucas Urseg. Like, I can go on and on. Let's just even say, like, the next catcher, Carter Jensen. Like, all of these guys are under contract for the next 3 years. So rather than try to call up somebody, have a worse rotation, operate in a different manner, if Lugo was willing to take the deal, and obviously he was, for what I think is still below market value had he entered free agency, well, then why wouldn't you do the deal? It makes perfect sense.
Well, and also something that we'll hopefully maybe get a little more insight on tomorrow. We're expected, at least our normal time, to have J.J. Piccolo, the general manager of the Royals, on Tuesday, if not later this week, as he's scheduled to come on, is also maybe a reality set in with what was truly on the table for a potential trade. And we all know the speculation was, could you package Lugo with a Blake Mitchell or other prospects to get a Duran or somebody like that? And then we saw, I think last week, the Padres had a strong offer and the Red Sox reportedly turned it down, meaning I don't know if Duran really was actually
doesn't sound like it
capable of being part of that trade if you moved on from Lugo.
Deal.
So at that point, you're like, well, as much as we said trade him, like not trade him for nothing. And so if you really thought you weren't going to get back any bit of the value you think he's worth, and you know that he was interested in staying, well, then this was the next best option, or the best option, I guess you could argue, if that's really the case. Later on in the show, we're going to talk about, like, well, how the heck do you fix the outfield? Because that is still the biggest question that they have for this year and beyond, because now you're not getting any outfield prospect back or anything like that. But this stabilizes your rotation for 2026. Now, can we talk about reality for a second, though, too? Because the reality still is for this year, Cody, Michael Wacha is available. Seth Lugo is available. Noah Cameron's available. Chris Bubich just went on the IL with rotator cuff strain.
That's
Lorenzen maybe is back soon, but he's on the IL. And we know Cole Reagans is on the IL also with like a shoulder issue or whatever until the middle of August. I mean, that is still the reality of the 2025 problem of a team that, hey, they played better as of late, and it was a nice series win. We were there yesterday. It was awesome to see different guys also contribute. Noah Cameron, even though he didn't have his best stuff, still found a way, as he continues to do.
He only gave up one run.
Yeah. I mean, the first inning looked like it could have been, you know, a four-run inning. Instead, it's nothing. Nothing.
Zero.
So there's still some positives there, but I think when you look at this 2025 team, the other part you and I were texting about before the trade went down was, at some point, could you even move Lugo? Because you got to have somebody pitch. I mean, you were still very close to a rotation that might have to have not only Rich Hill in it, but Dallas Keuchel. I mean, that still is a possibility.
And some other guy I've never heard of probably was a real risk. And now, at least with Lugo, none of those guys are going anywhere. Bubich becomes, depending on if he can get back healthy and all that stuff, a much, much, much more likely wintertime trade candidate. If you're asking yourself, we'll get to it later, like, how do they solve the outfield problem? Who do they have? I would just say the Bubich is probably the beginning of that conversation.
Yeah, I think a couple of their young prospects, people are going to have to be okay with it.
Carter Jensen and Blake Mitchell and those guys.
You might have to do it.
But, like, the way for this year's team, it at least in conjunction, it made the Grichuk move make more sense to me. And we'll talk about what he brings or doesn't bring or whatever to the table here in just a little bit. But in conjunction with it, Gold, it started to make more sense. At the very least, I've covered enough bad teams in this town between the Chiefs and the Royals, or I don't care when Sporting's going down, whatever. You've seen enough bad teams, Gold, over the history of your time, or bad run teams in the NFL and the ones we make fun of and all these other things over the years, where you're like, I don't even understand what you're doing. Like, I genuinely do not get your plan. It makes no sense to me. It seems idiotic if it does make sense. Can you let me in on your thought process a little bit? Cleveland Browns and the quarterbacks, whatever, right? But in this case, you and I look at their plan and we're like, it makes sense. I understand what it is you are attempting to do. It never guarantees results or promises that this plan will work. But you and I can look at it fairly easily and be like, I get what you're trying to do, JJ. It makes sense. It is a logical plan, it is a well-thought-out plan, and it can work. I don't know that it will, but it can. And so, like, at least that part makes me feel like I continue to think JJ is running a functional organization, which is different than I felt for a long time as a Royals fan, obviously, in the 90s.
Yeah, now look, the ultimate, grade, if you will, of this extension, everything, there's three things I think that we'll have to get answers to before you can fully say 100% it worked out. Now, I think on paper right now it's a very good deal. But what also makes it successful, Cody? And that is either this year or next year. To me, when you sign Lugo to an extension, you don't trade him. This year or next year, you have to make the playoffs. Absolutely have to. And that was the expectation this year anyway. But whether you think they can get on a run and make it this year or they do it next year, to me, if you tell me they sign Lugo to a two-year extension with a vesting option for a third year, and in the next 2 years, this year included, they don't make the playoffs, then I also still, you could say that was a mistake.
Yeah,
I mean, that's just
that's
the
fair
reality of the situation. The other part of it is, if you don't address the outfield this offseason, either by trading prospects, trading Bubich, or spending money, and I don't really like a lot of the free agent outfielders that are available anyway, then it also, to me, cannot be viewed as the scenario that makes the most sense. But we don't know the complete picture yet. If this is a sign that John Sherman, once again, is going to go spend some money fix this outfield, then it's great. You know, he obviously is willing to spend money to retain talent. He's done that over and over the last 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, that's been consistent.
And which is a great thing to see as a fan base. And I know some people have said, oh, it's only because of the stadium. By the way, I don't care what the reason is for it. He's doing it. And who knows if it's because he's trying to continue to keep them winning.
Well, we think he's all just going to slash the second they get a new stadium?
Isn't that what you want from any owner, especially here in a small market baseball team, that your owner is trying to stay competitive? I know we're frustrated with things that have happened this year. This team is underachieved overall. That's still a fact. But your owner is trying to stay competitive.
Yeah, I like that. I mean, I'm not going to complain about that. I want them to attempt to win, and I know we're going to have kind of the bigger conversation on it. But, yeah, why – again, the whole trading Lugo thing – because I saw someone in the text, I'm like, oh, you better tell Vern he's been so wrong. He's been so rude to listeners who said it can't just be trade Lugo or nothing. I'm like, we were all in the same boat. We all thought it was trade Lugo.
Because you weren't going to retain him.
Because you weren't going to retain him. And if you were going to retain him, the easiest possible path to retaining him was, well, you trade him, and let's just say he liked being here, and you do it like Michael Walker, and you ring him up in December, and you're like, hey, man, want to come back anyway? And you go through that part of the process. But because he was willing to stay here long term, I got no problem with it. I was team trade Lugo because I didn't think he was on the roster in 2026. Now he is on the roster in 2026 and 2027. Had a chance to be on the roster in 2028.
Yeah, the only concern would be that, yeah, he's going to be 36 next year. And that'll be, they're banking, I think, on, and we'll ask JJ tomorrow, but
innings.
That he doesn't have as much wear and tear on him, his arm, because he wasn't a starting pitcher for 10 years before this, okay? So maybe that's it. The other part is still what we've said, which is how do you fix the outfield now that you're saying we're not trading away one of our better assets. If there's another asset or two or three that you can trade, if they do that this offseason, it all comes together, and we're talking about this team in 2026 being right there as well. We'll get through the different angles with this throughout the show today, obviously, as we continue broadcasting live from St. Joe. Padded practice number two for the Chiefs.
Team stuff
is actually right in front of us today.
Oh,
I like that.
Let's see.
It's actually
coming this way.
You can actually see a little bit from this angle today, which is obviously exciting. We mentioned Isaiah Pacheco is going to join us after practice. That's expected to be a little after 11 o'clock or so. He'll join us exclusively as Cody, you may have heard in the background.
I was trying to kill a wasp.
Caused the table to flip over as he's trying to as he's trying to kill wasp number two. PETA's
going to
be on your ass, man.
I'm trying to get stung by a wasp today.
Ass. I'm text line's worried for you.
What? Because PETA's going to find out some local Kansas City radio host.
They're worried, man. You swat a fly or a gnat, they might come after you.
Travis Kelce just made a 25-yard catch down the field, although at the end of it, somebody did punch the ball out.
Oh, that was the whole thing last year.
Classic thing. Oh, he gets so mad at it because you're like, you're not making your name off of my back, remember?
Yeah,
because players love to punch the ball out on Travis, I feel like.
Don't you think we are still too early in camp for – like the
a fight? I love a good camp fight.
A little fight or whatever. Andy Andy doesn't like those or whatever. But it's too early. We haven't had a ton of hot days yet. This is really the first hot day at camp. And it's only day two of Pats. Fast forward to next week after they've been – maybe even Friday. That's when there's a chance of that kind of stuff. I think it's too early in camp for that to happen. There's also – they haven't even a preseason game yet. I think that's part of it. We are going to get to our Camp Darling Island in the 11 o'clock hour today.
Decisions
to be made. Two people have to go. I think there's one that's an easy chop from the island, if you will, at this point in time. Remember, there's reasons why you can get voted off, reasons why you can get voted back on. Right now, only one player has been voted off.
Yeah, and that was Jaquarius Spivey.
Is that right?
Just the one. We got double elimination today, another elimination tomorrow, another one on Friday when we're back up here at camp. It's going to be real thin on the island come Friday. So, yes, we will have that coming up in the 11 o'clock hour. And as you mentioned, in the 11 o'clock hour, we're expected to be joined by Isaiah Pacheco as well. The thing we talked about to open the show, the left tackle stuff. I mean, at this point, if Joshua Simmons is healthy, he's the starting left tackle. My bigger question is, are they going to let Jalen Moore actually try to win the job from Jawan Taylor? Or is this a for-show competition in which we split reps because Taylor just got back healthy? Because I feel like left tackle is Joshua Simmons, and I'm asking more questions about, is Jalen Moore being given an actual opportunity to win the job at right tackle? Or do they just grandfather in Jawan Taylor in the security that comes with knowing what you're getting there, I guess?
So that's where I lean. I think what we're watching is we know what we have in Jawan Taylor. He's still coming off an injury. At least it's good that he's off the pup list and is practicing. That's obviously a great sign for him. But you know what you have in Jawan Taylor. So let's see what Jalen Moore can do at right tackle, whether it's for this year. Also, let's not forget, In 2026, there's a really good chance he's the right tackle. So I think that's what this is. Now, unless, like, if we get to preseason and Juwan Taylor looks like he's lost a step or Jalen Moore looks incredible, sure. But my sense
is – or he gets injured.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. My sense is they want Jalen Moore to have plenty of reps at right tackle because he's been playing left tackle in San Francisco at times. And they want to know what they also have in the future at right tackle, which likely is Jalen Moore. But I'm with you on the Simmons part. He's ahead of schedule. You got to love the fact that he's actually available. I want to see after today if he's full go tomorrow, because this will be the most
2 days in practice since October. In a row. Yeah.
You know, these are the toughest practices he's ever had, probably. You know, so how does he hold up? Is he sore? Like, we find out tomorrow, we're just taking it easy. Do we get that kind of thing or no? He continues to go. If that's the case, like, tomorrow will be the one for me. If he gets through today and tomorrow, and then we're here Friday and there's no, like, setback or anything, then I'm a full-on believer that the medical staff, their evaluation during the draft was top-notch, and other teams screwed up in that regard.
Then it's just getting hurt in the normal way anyone could get hurt, right? It's not we're worried about the risk of re-injury due to the fact that you are coming into this year hurt. We are instead having the conversation, Gold, that is, can he get hurt like any person can get hurt? Which is a very different conversation overall, and not something you worry about on a daily basis unless it's an oft-injured player in which you're just constantly asking the questions about whether or not these guys are going to go get it.
Lance says, you know, play the best five. I hear you. I hear you. That we just also, a couple things with that. As much as people criticize Juwan Taylor, I'm still not convinced that Jalen Moore in 2025 is a better right tackle than Juwan Taylor. Let's just start with that. Number two, financial stuff does play a role. It just does for week one. Now, if Juwan Taylor is struggling and they are 4 games in or 2 games in, absolutely, they're not going to have a worse player out there if they think they have a better player behind them. But I'm not – like, I don't know why we're sitting here – not you, but, like, I don't know why we're sitting here today and acting like we just know for a fact Jalen Moore is a better right tackle than Juwan Taylor. We definitely don't.
Give him a chance to win the
job. Yeah, and they would argue they probably are right now. I just think the end result is going to be Juwan Taylor being the right tackle, and they know what the baseline is for him.
What's the price gap difference where it wouldn't seem too big? Because Jalen Moore's making $10 million, and Juwan Taylor's making $25 million. Is that right? Roughly? It doesn't have to be exact, but that's roughly the numbers between the two. Like, I don't know. I mean, it's not like a rookie and Juwan Taylor. You know, they're both making pretty good-sized checks. One will be a backup. One will be a starter.
Yeah, I actually like the fact that it's basically a contract year for Juwan Taylor. He knows that he's going to get cut.
Yeah, he's not going to be a Chief
at the end of the season, I mean. Not this year. His cap at this year is $27.3 million. I don't think Jalen Moore is necessarily better than him for this year. Also, when you just don't week one have someone making $27 million. Yeah. And don't sign a quarterback, because that's a different animal. $27 million for a quarterback is different than $27 million for a tackle.
It just doesn't happen often. It's not a common occurrence, so you can't necessarily bank on it.
Yeah.
I'm not telling you that it's not a factor. In a perfect world, it certainly is that case. Should we get to a weather report?
Yes, let's find out what we're dealing with today. Cloudy.
Although, I don't know, man. We're fighting.
With your training camp forecast, I'm meteorologist Cloudy with a Chance. And very hot today, highs around 100 degrees. And with dangerous heat like this, it's good to know the warning signs for heat exhaustion. Keep a lookout for things like headache, muscle cramps, and thinking the Bengals have a snowball's chance in hell of winning the Super Bowl. I'm meteorologist Cloudy with a Chance for Cody and Gold on 96.5 The Fan.
Oh, Drew's not even here to defend himself. He waited until Drew was gone to take a shot.
You see what happened before? I was thinking Drew was giving him some material to take shots at us.
So he's got to take one against himself.
And now Drew's getting shots fired towards him. He's not wrong, though. I mean, I think the heat definitely would cause you to believe some things are going to happen that aren't.
Going to hallucinate?
Mm-hmm.
You and I
mm-hmm.
were at the Royals game yesterday, and it was miserably hot. This is back-to-back days of just sitting in the heat.
Yesterday was a lot
just
of fun, though.
Baking.
Shout out to our guy Nate for the invite over there at the dugout suite. That was awesome yesterday. That was awesome. And a couple of the kids in the suite got four different baseballs some of the kids that were in the suite got. So
Sandy Alomar Jr. threw one over. Salvi threw one over.
Mm-hmm. Carlos Santana accidentally, I think, threw one over.
Yeah, he was trying to go over the net but came up a little bit short. Yeah. Arm's a little dead these days.
Maybe
a little up there in age.
Maybe so.
As a player. So, but here's the thing. If Cloudy with a Chance threw shade, but Drew's not here, I'm still to assume that Drew is providing him material. He's like, oh, yeah, you can take a shot at me while I'm not there, and then it'll throw him off the scent.
Find out tomorrow.
Throw him off the scent.
Find out tomorrow. Yeah, so far, he's fired shots at you, me, and Drew. JT, I know you're filling in this week. You got to be careful.
I'm about to say, that sounds like it's going to happen to me next. I don't need anything.
I don't know. Maybe. I mean, who knows? I don't know if you're involved. I don't know if Drew gave you some tips on this or not. If maybe Drew told you you've got to start filling in on the Cloudy with a Chance. Or, well, I still don't know who's overall behind it. But text line's convinced Drew is throwing us off by having him take a shot. Cody, you like what you said. Someone says, no way Cloudy with a Chance is not gold. You guys still
think it's not gold.
You guys still think it's me. There, I can
Someone yesterday was
you.
Convinced it was Nick Schwartz, yeah. Our former producer.
I can promise you. He's I swear. Busy. Like we joke on this show, and so I can 1,000% promise you. I won't lie to you, okay?
It's not on this.
It is not me, all right? It's not me. It's not Cody either, and I'll leave it at that.
You know
it's not me.
It doesn't sound like my voice.
Well, JT, we haven't cleared you yet. I don't know. It could be you.
You sounded guilty just saying.
Yeah, it could be you. All right, up next as we continue broadcasting live from Chiefs training camp, let's talk more about another move the Royals made over the weekend. That was acquiring a veteran outfielder, plus Cags is headed to the IL. That's next here from camp. In St. Joe, Cody and Gold broadcasting live from Chiefs camp. Again, Isaiah Pacheco is going to join us when practice wraps up. That should be in about a half hour or so from now in our camp coverage here on 96.5. The Fan is brought to you by Break Time, Missouri's homegrown convenience stores. Download their mobile app. Find a location near you. Even though we're up at camp, we are still streaming the show as well on YouTube, Twitch, Facebook, X. Make sure you subscribe. I believe JT has our figurine set up, although I'll be honest, I haven't checked the stream. For all I know, JT has something to embarrass us. I have no idea. Check the stream. Let us know. Okay? Check the stream. Let us know what he set up. But I believe we have the video stream up and running as well. We'll get back into some Chiefs talk here in just a second, but I want to continue talking Royals because before the Lugo extension, the bigger news for the weekend was not only Chris Bubich, unfortunately, going to the IL, yeah. But it was Randall Grichuk getting traded, the veteran outfielder from the Diamondbacks who were on full-blown fire sale mode. Gets traded to the Royals to provide some depth. The trade, actually, I'm sure they were already talking to him, and we know they were interested in the offseason, but the trade happened about 3 hours after we learned that Caglione is now on the IL with some left hamstring tightness.
Yeah, so the timing of it I do not think is just a reactionary trade to Jack Caglione going in the IL, which, by the way, God, that's tough. For a guy who's started slow, obviously, mm-hmm. Nobody's trying to deny that, to have the hamstring tighten up on a hot-ass day at Kauffman, and then to send you to the IL, hope it's just a short trip, and you're right back, and you're in the lineup, and all the other stuff. But Grichuk's going to be a part of the lineup no matter what. They needed a
well,
right,
especially against lefties.
Look, I looked at the numbers on it. My initial thought is because I thought they were going to trade Seth Lugo, and now they're not. Is that not much of a needle mover? It's an improvement in the way that improving the outfield right now is not hard. It's a low bar. The stats they've been getting this entire year have been at a level so poor that Grichuk is an improvement. I'm not trying to pretend like it's improvement. If you take last year Grichuk, it's a pretty good size improvement. If you take this year, in which we're hearing the same stuff, we're like, hard hit. Some of the advanced metrics are very good on him, but he's just been the beneficiary of some bad luck. If you buy into that, it's get harder to buy kind of into the thing. Look, he provides a little bit of power. He's another outfielder. He's not a lefty outfielder like they called up MJ, and they had Rave and Cags. It just felt like it was getting to be lefty central too much, and against left-handed pitching and against other guys, I wanted a guy with some power. So like, and they gave up Andrew Hoffman. This is the same as giving. This is the same as
the
giving
whole
up
Cam Devaney.
Cam Devaney thing. It's just giving up a 26-year-old reliever who they've given a couple of cracks to and it hasn't worked. I don't care. They gave up nothing for him, so I don't really care.
Even if you were anti-buyer, right? Like, even if you were like, "Hey, do not buy." This falls in that category of. It's you know, come on, you're trying to just better your roster a little bit without giving up too many pieces or a significant piece. That's something that nobody should be upset about. Like, you know, we debated for weeks whether or not they should be willing to trade certain pieces. I told you I don't want them trading for giving up a lot for assets that are going to be rentals that require a lot. Like, Eugenio Suarez is going to take a lot as a rental. I don't want them in those waters, and I don't think they are, by the way.
No,
I don't want them messing with, you know, Cedric Mullins, Ryan O'Hearn, what those guys might require. This is kind of perfect. It's a trade that you don't give up a whole lot, and
it's
you get
a little
a player,
like buying without feeling like they're buying.
You have a player, as you said, you know, that I think against lefties will be really nice to have in the lineup. He'll be in there every day that there's a lefty on the mound, and it doesn't mean that'll be the only time, but he'll be out there for that. It's someone that does have experience. Obviously, you talk about the clubhouse aspect of it, and then. Look, the sheer depth in the outfield. I mean, Melendez just got called up, and we don't know what his future is. Cags, as we just said, is on the IL. And I believe OPS-wise, he's got, like, the fifth-best OPS on the team. That's how bad it's been at times for a majority of the lineup. So, yeah, I don't know how you really hate the trade. I'm not trying to hype it up and act like it's this amazing move, but, yeah, fine. Right. It adds some more depth. It gives you some more options, and it's someone they wanted to sign in the offseason, and you hope that they can get him to catch some fire for, you know, 30, 40 games or something like that. That's what you're hoping for, while you also continue to send a message to the clubhouse that, like, you're trying. You're not waving the white flag on these guys. And that, I think, is a part of the aspect of you can be both. You can say we're not going to go all in as buyers, but we're still going to do things to try to better the team. That doesn't jeopardize the future. Yeah. And to me, that's what they have done with this move and the Adam Frazier move.
If this were the only thing they were to talk about, instead of the Seth Lugo thing, we'd come in here on today and, like, all right, let's talk about Grichuk. I would have told you that this is not a move, if they had not done anything with Lugo, this is not a move worthy of getting upset about. He is blocked. The similar to DeDevaney is blocked. There is no room for Andrew Hoffman. The bullpen is too deep, with too many talented arms, under too many years of control. There is nowhere for him to go. I do see some of the stuff with, I know that there's some analytic people who follow the Royals who do like Hoffman probably more than I do, as a result of some of the advanced numbers suggest he should be better. I've watched him pitch a handful of times now. He has not been very effective, and they need to be better in the outfield. My initial thought on this trade is that they were, if they traded some guys away, let's say they traded Estevez, they traded Lugo, and these things that I thought might happen, this was their way of trying to make sure you don't bottom out, right? Let's protect ourselves a little bit. Let's make sure that this team doesn't just fall apart, because we're still trying to get to 26 and 27. And he technically does have an option. So you could hypothetically bring him back as part of next year if he is a good fit. The one thing I'll say is they are targeting, like, veterans in the, like, previously known as leadership category a little high, in the sense that, like, what's going on with the rest of the clubhouse? If I got to hear from Vern last week that Luke Maley's a good clubhouse guy, or Adam Frazier was a great clubhouse guy, we know Grichuk has a reputation of being a great clubhouse. Like, what, can somebody who's already here be a great, you know, like, and I'm assuming there are, but it just felt like that's, like, a specific skill they have been targeting for whatever reason. Another thing we can ask J.J. Piccolo about.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously important. I don't know if that's, like, why they traded for Grichuk or whatever necessarily. I think it's just part of, that's one of the things, like, if you're asking what do they like about the move, that's one of the aspects to it. So we'll see. I just think they're doing kind of the, you know, you always ask, can you be all in or can you be all out, or can you be in between? And I know some people get frustrated with feeling like, oh, you need to make a decision. You're either all in or you're not, kind of thing. And I think they're trying to do both, which is tricky, but also now that you've signed Seth Lugo to an extension, it kind of makes sense. Just because you signed Lugo to an extension doesn't mean you're now going to trade for Eoinio Suarez or somebody else. You're going to continue to make I bet you there's another small move or two that are going to happen before Friday. A small move.
Yeah.
To potentially help the roster this year. I would be surprised.
But what is it? Another outfielder? I mean, there's not room for play unless you're sending Rave down or trading Rave
Cody, at this point, it might have to be for another veteran pitcher. I mean, that's where they're at in terms of depth in the rotation. I know you have Lugo, Waka, Cameron. Hopefully you get Lorenzen back. And Rich Hill was fine for the one start, but unless you're planning on having Rich Hill also be part of this for a while, I mean, you are down a pitcher. So are they confident having Rich Hill or Keuchel give them a couple starts the remainder of the season? Or do they think, all right, we got to go find our – can we replicate the Michael Lorenzen trade from a year ago? Is there anybody else like that where we gave up, I think, what they said, Walter Pennington, I think it was.
Yeah.
Is there – that kind of move is what I'm asking. Is there find another fifth starter. And again, let me be clear. Like, people misconstrue, I think, sometimes when you and I say, like, the move makes sense. I'm not sitting here saying you should be all excited they traded for Grichuk or excited they trade for another veteran pitcher or something.
You should be excited about the Lugo deal.
You should be excited about. The other moves are, yeah, they're trying to still stay competitive without mortgaging the future. And I'm fine with that. If you want to say you're still in it for 25 and you're not also hurting 26, then...
Because Andrew Hoffman's not hurting 26.
Yes.
So you're taking a chance. You're taking a chance that these small little moves, coupled with the thing you've been waiting for all year, just simply better play from other players, lifts you into a playoff spot. You're not still so far out of the race that that's not at least viably plausible based on the things that you're discussing. I refuse to get worked up. And you're right. I'm not, like, over the moon over here comes Randall Grichuk. It's fine. He's certainly an upgrade. I'm not even pretending that's the case. Do I feel like it moves the needle a ton? No, it doesn't. But it also offends me zero goal between that and the Cam Devaney.
And there's a chance to make some better.
That's also
part of the equation as well. You guys can continue to chime in. We'll talk more about Seth Lugo and what it says about this organization, and also what do you do to fix this outfield still now that you're not trading him. We'll get to that a little bit later on in the show. 913-586-7965 as we continue broadcasting from camp. The other part that I think, understandably so, that caused some people to get a little frustrated was you saw Nick Kurtz, the rookie for the A's over the weekend, put together the best performance in a game by a rookie, period. One of the best performances by a baseball player ever in a game, and that is the 6-for-6, 4-home run, 16 total bases, I think it was, evening at the ballpark. And he's awesome, and he was even on the IL earlier this year, and he's now the heavy favorite to win Rookie of the Year. And so I saw a few people texted and tweeted, hey, doesn't this make you more frustrated with the start of Cags' career? Yeah, frustrated, I guess. Does it mean that
the Kurtz started slow for a month?
Yeah, for about 25 games, he was hitting .202. Now, he has since then been very, very good.
Yeah, but what's Cags at? But, 30 games?
He's probably at 40 now. But the point is, I'm with you, the point you're trying to make.
Yeah.
But I'm with you on the, like, I was going to say, yeah, am I frustrated? Sure, I would like our guy to be hitting 4 home runs. Of course.
Hell yeah.
No doubt, frustrating. Does it mean that Nick Kurtz should have been the guy they drafted and is going to have a better career now? No. No, it doesn't at all. And people want to make that decision after 40 games. Looks like Nick Kurtz is going to be a pretty good player. Cags is off to a slow start in his career. Acting like we know the answer to either of them already would be foolish.
Yeah, I'm
sure. But yeah, I'm frustrated, sure.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's some teams beating themselves about Angel Barroa after his rookie year. But then, you know, there were better players in that draft, and we just don't know the answer yet. Look, Kurtz won the Rookie of the Year the other night. It's a wrap. That's done.
Barring him getting hurt for the rest of the year, yeah.
Done. I thought it was Jacob Wilson the entire way, but you can't get hot like that, close the gap in the betting market anyway, and then have a 4-home run, and I think maybe 6 inches away from a 5-home run day, which has never been done in Major League Baseball history, and not win Rookie of the Year. So Kurtz has won Rookie of the Year. Congrats to him. Obviously, he's having a tremendous year post the 25-game slow start to with it. But yeah, if you are already saying they've made a huge mistake in who they've targeted.
We don't know yet. We don't know yet.
Way too early. Do I have to go through the Rookie of the Year odds or the Rookie of the Year winners over the years? Do you think that they're all just like studs? Yeah. There are plenty, and I do mean plenty, of guys in the Rookie of the Year winners over the years that are not good players, right, Gold? I mean, the Royals had two. Two. Bob Hamlin did not have any kind of career. Angel Barroa did not have any kind of career. And if I remember right, in the Angel Barroa year, didn't Carlos Fabless finish second that year? I mean, so, like, what we're talking about here is a completely different conversation. Last year, Luis Gil and Paul Skeens won it. Okay. I mean, Skeens is a pretty good player. I don't know what Gil's doing this year. Wasn't he hurt for a portion of it? Then Gunnar Henderson and Corbin Carroll. Then Julio Rodriguez and Michael Harris II. So, like, I mean, and look, Jonathan India won it in 2021. There's some good players in there, and then there's some average players in there. Look, I'm not telling you in 2018 when it was Shohei and Ronald Acuna that Nick Kurtz might not be a really good player, but they could also be both be really good players.
And as someone points out on the text line, too, and it's like, yeah, not only that, the draft part, we'll find out what it is, but Nick Kurtz was drafted ahead of CAG, so unless, I believe, right, unless I have that backwards, so... unless you wanted them to trade up, and I believe Nick Kurtz was right before Cags.
Somebody mentioned Ken Harvey.
They wouldn't have been able to even. Yeah,
no, Ken Harvey did not.
Nick Kurtz
win the
went
year.
Fourth. Cags went sixth or seventh.
Oh yeah, so you couldn't even have taken him anyway.
So what's the point? Now, if your point is you're just concerned that
other teams are better at finding their guy and getting him up,
or just developing and having success right away, that's a fair criticism. You know my feelings about the hitting coach and everything. We want to go back over that again. I still feel the exact same way today, even though the offense has been better overall the last 3 weeks. Still have the same opinion. I still think I'm long-term concerned about developing hitters in the organization. Yeah, that still hasn't changed. But making it seem like we already know who the player Cags is or who the player Nick Kurtz is crazy. How about we just enjoy what Nick Kurtz did? Because it was pretty special.
Honestly.
Something we've never seen from a rookie.
I have no intention at any point this year. I had zero intention at all this year to watch a single second of A's baseball, okay? No.
Oh, did you hear the play-by-play? So their play-by-play broadcaster, I felt bad because he took a ton of heat for it, but their broadcast 2 nights ago, I think it was, it wasn't Kurtz's home run. They were playing in the play. I wish we had the play-by-play call. That's my bad, JT. I should have had you pull it. Basically, he's like, oh, we'll see if this one stays fair, and it does. And it was like a hit to almost dead center. And then he apologized. I lost in the lights. But the call made it seem like it was like in a bin right down the foul line. This was a home run by a, I mean.
To center.
900 feet. I mean, it was it was an unbelievable call.
Hey, man, it's harder than you think sometimes.
Oh, no. And people gave him a hard.
People are allowed to make mistakes.
And he owned it. No, but it was just a funny clip. And it went viral over the weekend.
You're like, ooh, just maybe. Nope, not quite. Look, again, had no intention to do it. But after he had three home runs, goal, do I get on the MLB app? Do I see what's going on with?
Well, I thought my alerts were messed up. I have Nick Kurtz. I'm not going to talk about the fantasy baseball team. I know you guys don't give a you know what. But point is, he's on my team, and so I get alerts when he hits a home run. And the first one, I'm like, okay, yeah, I've seen that before. Second one, I'm like, oh wow, he's having a really nice game. The third one, I said, my phone's acting up. Like, why am I getting duplicate notifications? Then the fourth one happened, and I just started laughing because like, what is going on in this game? And I look, and it's like 15-2 against the Astros or whatever. But I thought there was actually something wrong with the app and the notifications. Like, there's no way he's hitting three or four home runs and that quickly as well. So that was pretty wild. Okay, oh, yeah, we have the call that I was talking about from the A's. All right, here's what I'm mentioning.
1-2 pitch. High in the air, deep to right. That ball is foul. Or gone.
That ball was absolutely launched. Law Dog posing him up at the dish. He knew it off the bat. It was just a matter of how far.
So the funniest thing about the call is his color commentator, but also, so he couldn't see, but his color commentator is like, oh, that one was gone right off the bat. Like, he knew, he's like, oh, he knew it was gone.
You throw your boy under the bus.
Then the play-by-play guy's like, that one is going down the line and foul. And if you watch the video, I mean, it's right center. Not even, I mean, no doubt.
Yeah, it's right by the bullpen, pretty much. If you've ever been a Houston stadium, it's right by the bullpen. It was so funny. I'm like, wait, what?
Oh. Yeah, I've been to, I still call it Minute Maid Park, whatever the hell it's called now.
It's not called Minute Maid Park?
No, anymore? It's some air conditioning company or something, like something like that. It's called something different.
Little news in the NFL, Cordarrelle Patterson has been released by the Pittsburgh Steelers, so he's out on the market. He broke the news himself. He put, breaking news, Pittsburgh Steelers release old washed-up Cordarrelle Patterson on his day off. I swear to God, that's exactly what he tweeted. The real Cordarrelle Patterson.
That's so good.
So they had an off day there in Pittsburgh.
Did you know he went to Hutch Community College?
And
Cordarrelle Patterson?
No, I didn't know that. Went ahead and let him know that he wasn't going to be on the roster anymore, you know? He wanted to make sure that's the case. Look, you mentioned college. I know it's community college. I've been thinking about it for a week because I can't decide. Is it a mistake for the Big 12 to be turning down $250 million in advertising, essentially? Essentially, Memphis bribed the Big 12 in an attempt to get in the Big 12. And because we know there's going to be yet another round of conference realignment at some point, and while today it appears the ACC is at bigger risk than you, there was definitely a time where the Big 12 looked like it was going to be the sinking ship, and instead the Pac-12 got taken in. So don't just take that as a, I guarantee you're safe. I don't know, man. Should be turning out $250 million? I mean, I understand they don't, like, move the needle a ton, as we'd mentioned, like, for the Grichik stuff. Like, I understand it doesn't, like, ooh, Memphis football. But I don't know, $250 million spread amongst the rest of your members? That doesn't seem like all that bad. Have the money to bribe yourselves into other better leagues, you know?
So it sounded like FedEx was going to help with sponsorship. That was the company that was going to provide $250 million. Obviously, FedEx, Memphis area, they're based out of there, the ties to the university and all of that. And they're a massive sponsor for that university. And like, I think just when you first hear it, you're like, well, yeah, take the money, $250 million, why wouldn't you? But then you dive deeper, the Big 12 right now is still trying to be strategic on who they let in. Now, I told you off air, I was like, I'd rather let West Virginia go to the ACC, bring in Memphis, and see who else you can get at that point in time. And we all know it's all about television market, and certainly Memphis isn't necessarily a small market by any means, but it's not like you're talking about bringing in New Jersey or New York market or something like Rutgers or something crazy.
We're going
to
be making fun of Rutgers.
I know. We're going to have Pacheco on the show. I got to ask him about Rutgers.
I was going to say, the day we're going to have Pacheco on, you're going to make a Rutgers joke?
Well, I just got to tell, I'll be honest, man, for whatever reason, Rutgers is always used as the example of like the team that doesn't fit in a conference, and he's not going to like it, but I'll have to bring it up. We'll talk to Pacheco about his alma mater. I expect him to defend Rutgers, obviously.
But anyway, should have taken the bribe.
To this conversation, I don't think you want it. That sounds great, but how long is that lasting? Is that a 5 year? Is that what happens after 5 years though? Like, oh, then it's cool. We got the money now. We divide it up.
I think FedEx is probably good for it for a while.
You think
right?
That's the. I think it also makes you look desperate if you do that. It actually, I think Brett Mark did it strategically also to try to raise the profile of the conference. You don't want to be like, oh, you guys are just, oh, I can just pay my way in constantly. And I understand that's happened before.
But like, lots of conferences have done that.
But I think there's some of that where like, you're not just going to bribe us to get in here. We want to pick you. You're not telling us you want it. We're picking you. I think there's a little bit of that going on.
Do you think that they should just rob from the ACC then? Why not just go all the way in? And why don't you rob Clemson? Tell them, hey, man, forget the S. You know, we'll give you the full share. Forget the SEC. That thing's not happening right now. Come on over to the old Big 12.
Because
we'll supercharge this thing, and we'll get rid of that old conference of yours, that dusty conference we don't care about.
Because that also is more expensive to go about your business that way. You're hoping the ACC starts to fall apart, and you can just poach then when they're vulnerable and weak, versus right now you're trying to get them when they're still intact. I think it's more money to try to make that happen.
More buyouts.
And then also you risk that the ACC tries to start stealing. Then you get in a whole war and battle. I think right now you're trying to just play kind of cool and see – what the future is going to be, even though I still like what Brett Yormark has done since he's become the commissioner of the Big 12.
Paul Feinbaum buried him for passing on Memphis.
Well, he's an SEC guy. What do you expect?
Why does he want Memphis in the conference?
I don't know. But I'll say this. I think Memphis, too, like, their basketball program is fine. Their football program is fine. This year, they actually might be pretty good.
Yeah.
But overall, it's a fine basketball and football program. It's not like, you know what I mean? Like, Memphis basketball... Last time they were good, Coach Cal was there, and they were playing Kansas in the national title game. Okay?
I guess just do they have anything in a market that gets that way? Because West Virginia's a waste of time in this conference.
Well, I told you I'd get rid of West Virginia.
Shuffle them away? They should be an ACC team. What are they doing here?
Move them to the ACC.
Can we just trade straight up for one of your schools?
Yeah.
I don't know which one, but, like, I don't know, a different one, I guess, because West Virginia feels like they're just taking up space in this conference. I overall have liked what Yormark has done. I think he has raised the brand and the profile of the conference. And I'll give credit to anybody who stayed alive when you could have died. Like, the Big 12 could have died in the initial conference realignment when they lost Colorado and Nebraska and all those. They definitely could have died when they lost their two biggest programs. They lost the number one and number two programs in their conference in Oklahoma and Texas. That's a tough thing to survive. And instead, the Pac-12 died instead. And now, look, they also lost two of their biggest programs, but they hadn't right away. And so you could have sunk just like they sunk. I don't even know who's in the Pac-12 anymore. We just joked about it. Boise joined
them? Technically, right now, this year, it's still only going to be Washington State and Oregon State. And then next year, they'll have the revamped conference that has, Fresno State, Boise State, I don't know if UNLV got the invite or not, if they're staying in the Big 12 or the Mountain West.
But I'll tell you this much. If you're getting left out of the Pac-12 invite right now, it ain't good for you.
No, I mean, look, the Mountain West just added Grand Canyon. So,
they did pretty well there in the
– Basketball-wise, that's the only thing I will say.
Fun conference.
We all know football is the driving force behind realignment, but from a basketball perspective, the Big 12 is, to me, generally speaking, the best conference for basketball. The SEC this past year was stacked.
Was better.
But the Big 12 is the better basketball conference.
I agree.
Other than a one-year run here for the SEC. All right, up next, we will have our first edition of the week of Camp Darling Island. We will eliminate two more members off the island.
Oh, man.
Going to have to do that. Plus, once practice wraps up, which could be happening the next 10, 15 minutes or so, we will have Isaiah Pacheco, Chiefs running back, join us live from Chiefs camp here on 96.5 The Fan.